Hey there, my name is Cassie Torresias, and 8 years ago, I launched my own online graphic design studio and booked a one-way ticket to travel the world in pursuit of my own freedom-filled life. I now own a multi-million dollar online business, The Bucket List Bombshells, teaching other women how to do the same, alongside my best friend, co-founder, and podcast co-host, Shay Brown. Around here, we believe that your crazy dreams aren't crazy, and that it's time for you to start creating the life and career that you dream about too. Whether you want to travel and work remotely, or simply just want to be your own boss, it's possible to live out your passion and purpose without just scraping by. We know that this path isn't always easy to navigate though, so we're here to help you. From making a career change, starting and growing your own business, balancing life and business, and most importantly, pursuing your own freedom-filled life. Get ready for real, relatable stories and advice on your journey towards something more. We serve it up BFF style, so pour yourself that third cup of coffee and let's dive in. Welcome to the Freedom-Filled Life Podcast. Hey guys, it's Cassie here. I am so excited to share this episode with you today. Shay and I are sitting down with our friend, Susie Agelopoulos, multi-six-figure Airbnb business queen, full-time traveler, and founder of the B&B Method, where she teaches how to start a profitable Airbnb business without actually owning any property. In this episode, Susie shares with us how she went from being a waitress making just $50K a year just a few years ago to now making over $70,000 in 1 month with her Airbnb business. But as you know, this is the Freedom Filled Life podcast, so we wanted to learn from Susie what steps she took to reach financial freedom in her 30s and how she also has location independent freedom to travel the world full time. Now, because of Airbnb, Susie is now living her dream life, her words, not mine. And in this episode, she breaks it down in simple steps to make your dream life possible too. Now, if you're listening and you've been interested in learning more about the short-term rental business, how Airbnbs are a profitable business model, and how you can start an Airbnb business without owning any property, then this episode is for you. Now, let's dive in. Well, welcome, Susie. I'm so excited to have you today with Shay alongside me on the Freedom Filled Life podcast. We were just joking around how we stumbled upon you on Instagram, and I feel like that's how all good friends are met these days, slid into your DMs. And we just love that you have, you know, such a similar mission of having financial freedom and really wanting to be your own boss and being passionate about travel. So I would love if you could kind of share with everyone who's listening just a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited and happy to be here. I am Susie. I basically fell into Airbnb just a few years ago and started traveling the world basically full time as I found the freedom within Airbnb. And then everybody started to ask me, like, if I won the lottery. So I saw so many people want freedom that I decided to teach other women how to do it as well. And now I own Airbnbs, I run Airbnbs, and I teach women all over the world how to start Airbnb businesses.
That's amazing. I feel like you guys have you have a similar mission to Cass and I with teaching, you know, the freedom to travel the world and having the financial freedom. But what I really gravitated towards when I found you was that travel lifestyle, because that's obviously what we and our audience have. So I would love to just rewind a little bit, like how and when did you start your business? Was this, you know, accidental, by choice? It sounds like you fell into it. So like, yes. What were you doing before that?
Oh man, here we go. This is where life gets good. So I'm Greek, and Greek people own restaurants, you know, primarily. My dad is a restaurateur, and of course, he taught me that I needed to go straight into the restaurant business after college, or after high school. And so I was working in the restaurant business for basically my whole life. I opened a restaurant probably like 12 years ago at this point, and was the boss and ran the restaurant and all of that stuff. And that was great, but also it was jail. And so just a few years after opening that, I basically told him, sorry, I don't want to do this anymore. We sold that and I went traveling. And I traveled for about 7 months. I was so jailed that I got pushed into like, I'm out of here. And I just fell in love with traveling, as most of us do. And after that trip, it was so hard for me to go back to a real life of sorts. Mm-hmm. And so I was constantly looking for ways out. I started a few random businesses, but I just honestly did not have the mindset down pat back then. And every little thing that happened, I would quit. I would say I failed and I quit. And so after like a few years of me starting random businesses and just not going through with it, I decided to go back to Seattle where my family is and open another restaurant, because what else was I going to do? So I go back to Seattle. And Amazon had moved in. And so before Amazon was there, Seattle was pretty quiet and dead, and you could just move right into a restaurant and open one up. It was like no big deal at all. But now, since Amazon moved in, it was expensive. And just to get into like a dead restaurant, it was like $200,000. And so, you know, my father was helping me. He was like, absolutely not. Like, you are not spending that kind of money. And so basically 2 years had passed. I was working in restaurants, waitressing, bartending, like cooking, actually cooking in my old restaurant, dishwashing, like hard laborious work, 60, 70 hours a week, making like no money compared to the hours. And after 2 years of not being able to find this restaurant that was going to save me, I had a nervous breakdown. And I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I have to change my life. Mm-hmm. And I kind of prayed for an answer. And where you set those intentions, the answer typically comes pretty fast. So I fell into online marketing, actually. I started listening to podcasts and learning about online marketing. And I just kind of like knew it was for me, and I had no idea what I was going to do or what that meant. But I really wanted to go for it with online marketing. There was only one problem. I had to get rid of the job because there would be no time to really learn and no time to actually build a business. I also had no idea what I was going to do for money during the time that I would build this business. So to make a really long story short, I quit all my jobs on intuition and thought, you know what, I'm just going to figure this out. Like, if all else fails, shit, I'll Uber. Like, I didn't care. I was willing to do whatever it took. So I quit all of my jobs in like 1 week, was scared out of my mind. And like all of us good travelers, decided I just need one more trip before I really go after it. I just need one more trip. I went to Bali. Trying to clear my mind, and joined a cooking class there, sat next to an older couple that was traveling the world. And I drilled them. I was like, you're doing what I want to do. What'd you do in your life? And they said a lot of things, but we actually live this lifestyle because we have a short-term rental in Hawaii. And that short-term rental makes $210,000 a year after taxes, 9 months. We live in it the other 3 months, and we just travel the world. And my jaw dropped, and I was like, what?
if people could see us, like, our jaws are dropping too.
So 5 years ago, $210,000 to me was like $22 million. Like, I was like, what the hell? And so, you know, when you set that intention and you just really like pray for the thing that you want, the answers usually come in some form. And it's just really up to you what you're going to do with the opportunity or the information. And so I spent the rest of that class drilling them on all of the information. I was very familiar with Airbnb. I'm a traveler. I've been using Airbnb since 2011 or 12 or whatever. And, you know, I just never thought about it, of course, as a business. And so they gave me all the answers. I continued on with my trip. And when I got home, I got scared. And I was like, am I really going to do that? What? I don't even know if I'm allowed. I don't even know how this is going to work. What if somebody steals all my stuff? You know, like all of the questions mm-hmm. are going through my head at this point. And the thing is that I didn't have that much money in savings. So at the end of the month, when all my bills came out, I knew I had to do something. And it forced me to take action when I was not as confident. And I put my my apartment that I was living in downtown Seattle on Airbnb, and it booked out, and I stayed at my parents. And that I made like $600 in 3 days, and I was like jaw dropped again. Like, I didn't even do anything for that money. Like, what the hell? And so I wasn't full time yet. I went back to my apartment, thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Like, I'm sitting on a gold mine and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? And I said, I got to do it again. I need more money. So I put it up again. It booked out for a week. I made like $1,000 and I was like, screw this. And I went there, packed my bags, never moved back. I moved into my parents' basement. And that is how I found Airbnb.
Oh my gosh, what an incredible story. I got so many goosebumps along the way of your journey. A similar story to us, we actually met a couple who was digital nomading and working online as service-based businesses. And they were the ones who, like, it was at a cafe and we like picked their brains and they gave us insight into like how they were doing it. So I really love how you prayed and you brought that intention, you brought that into your life. I feel like we had a similar journey as well. And then it's just about taking that risk. And I also love that you've been living in Airbnbs, because we were basically have been living in Airbnbs for almost a decade. I am currently living in an Airbnb. And I love that. And I love your story and your journey. That was so fun to come along that journey with you. So getting into kind of like the business model and the way that you run this Airbnb business, it sounds like, and I love that it's such a great way to break into the real estate industry with like relatively low risk. But can you speak to the structure of the business model of this sort of rental arbitrage or short-term Airbnb rental type of business without actually owning the property? So I think that's a key piece there.
Yeah, for sure. So 5 years ago, I didn't have any money to buy Airbnb, so I had to get creative. And after the first worked, I went on to basically Airbnb anything I could get my hands on. And back then, Airbnb was not as common and no one was teaching it and no one was even really talking about it. So I just really had to get creative because I needed the money for my dream business that I was building at the same time. So I started to talk to landlords. I started to figure out what the selling points were and why they would actually let me do something. And back then they had no idea what it was. Mm. And so I started working with these homeowners and builders and explaining like, I'll take care of your property and I'm basically managing it for you for free. And so really what happens is I teach women how to partner with homeowners, with investors, with builders, with anybody with properties. We sign a regular lease. We're not spending any more money. Sometimes they might ask, depending on who it is, like for, you know, maybe a little extra money or a percentage. And it may be worth it to do that. But typically we are just paying rent, we're paying the bills, and then we are putting our properties on Airbnb and we are making the profit on top of rent and bills.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. I know that I've been currently doing that in a more longer term kind of way with my apartment in Vancouver. And that's why when I came across you, you know, I kind of had already done it just a little bit. And you really opened my eyes to this concept of leasing, you know, relatively low risk, relatively low investment leasing, and then re-renting on Airbnb in this short term manner. So as you started building this business, what type of obstacles did you encounter and how did you overcome them?
The obstacles were, you know, just basically learning the business. And it was talking to the homeowners, like, what's going to be the selling point for these people to let me in their house? Once I got over that, I basically had to figure out how to furnish and get the place ready with the most minimal cash possible, because I was living cent to cent. And so I figured that out. I figured how to automate. I figured out how to travel. And all of those were obstacles because back then there were, like I said, no resources for people with Airbnbs. Now, you know, nowadays there's a lot more cleaners that are understanding the concept. There's places to keep the keys. There are, you know, like in cafes and things like that. But back then there really wasn't. So just learning all the ins and outs of the actual Airbnb business, I wouldn't say they were obstacles. They were just, you know, little kinks that needed worked out within.
Yeah. I have actually stayed in an Airbnb where I had to go get the keys from a cafe. And this was years ago. And I was so weird at first. I was like, and we just went in this cafe, everyone's drinking their coffee. And I'm like going into a lockbox and like keys. But you know, when I thought about it, like especially after listening to you and automating things and making sure that, you know, the process is as easy for millennials as possible, so they don't have to necessarily interact with the host, I was like, yeah, it was like pretty straightforward. And it was such a cool concept if you don't have the like the button locks or something like that. Totally. To get into the building. So I have experience and it was very smooth. It was a little like awkward, but it was smooth for sure. So you mentioned kind of how you worked with landlords and kind of chatting with them or these investors. For those who are skeptical about why a landlord would see the benefit of renting to you, to then for you to rent an Airbnb versus them doing it themselves and them making the profits, like what advice would you give, or like how do you kind of move through that obstacle?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, before you understand why it would be good for them and their property, you are skeptical. You're like, why the hell would somebody want me or be okay with me profiting off of their property? But if you look at it from the other side, I do own one property in Seattle, Washington, a townhouse. There's a lot of benefits to why I would never have a long-term rental again. And some of those are the fact that in Airbnb, we basically have the house cleaned every 3 days, okay? So there's no more long-term renters, you know, making it filthy dirty. One of my students, she met a landlord, and as soon as the landlord heard what she had to say about Airbnb, he was like, yes, I want to give you all my properties, because I just had a tenant that had 6 cats against the lease and they peed on everything. And I literally had to spend thousands of dollars ripping out everything and totally like fixing the place. So if you think about it from that angle, the house is going to be cleaned every 3 days. I teach to have it deep cleaned every like quarter. So you know that the inside is going to be good. Also, if there is a problem, if something is leaking, if somebody, you know, bangs something through the wall, you're going to know about it right away. And it has to be fixed before the next guest comes. So any kind of damage is addressed like immediately. There is the fact that people don't pay their rent, especially lately. And that's the biggest one. Like, you know, you're getting paid. If this Airbnb manager is bringing in the cash and wants to continue making a ton of money, then they better pay their rent, right?
Right.
So it's just these little factors that you present to the landlord or the homeowner or the builder. And it's actually just a positive thing.
So interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I've had, you know, I haven't done it on Airbnb. I've just been doing it sort of like subleasing. And my landlord was like really, really surprisingly open to it. And he's actually had to go in and meet some of my tenants and fix some things for me. So that relationship really worked out. I feel like if you, again, put the attention out there and you find that and kind of build that relationship. And now him and I have a really great relationship that I want to, you know, pitch him into doing something, you know, with allowing me to do the Airbnb route. So I definitely think it's possible. And I agree with you on the damages, actually. So that was his biggest concern. And I was like, you trust me, I will make sure that that's getting taken care of. And he's had like full confidence in that. So I love that. Thank you for sharing. So you started your business back in 2018 and you talked a little bit about how people are paying their rent. You kind of made a little mention there. I know that that's kind of related to the pandemic as to currently, you know, the situation of the economy, but how did the pandemic affect your business? Because you created it before that, you know, what types of growth or declines, adjustments did you have to face?
Yeah. So the day that they announced the pandemic, first of all, just FYI, Airbnb is like full. It's like completely booked out. I opened my Airbnb in 2016, actually. So even before that, my very first one, and it was booked every single day. And then all the rest of the Airbnb is booked every single day. So demand is not a thing. The day they announced that this COVID was going to be a worldwide pandemic, I basically lived my worst nightmare. I had all these properties, some of which my parents owned, and basically they announced a travel ban. And I was like, oh my God, what is going to happen? They announced, let's say the pandemic at 3 o'clock, 3:01, all my Airbnbs start canceling. And I mean, one by one, by one, by one, all of the reservations, every single last one. And it was one of those moments where it's like a TV moment where I just like shut off my phone and like dropped it. I was like, good night. Good night. Like I didn't know what was going to happen. Obviously we all had no clue what was happening. And, that night I had the worst probably night of my life. I woke up and my dad called me and basically said, don't worry. Like we're all in the same boat. You just hang on here. We're going to see what's going to happen and you will be completely fine. And it was just that, like, you know, parent thing where he called me and I was like, okay, my dad said it's going to be okay. And so what happened next was, again, crazy. So I thought like, okay, I lost my business. I lost all my income because I wasn't full-time online business back then. And I thought, how the hell am I going to pay my bills, all this kind of stuff. And so everybody was canceled. And within a few days, a few things happened. First of all, I had like 8 properties back then. And so all of us Airbnb hosts got together and we started to think of different things that we could do. And we all decided to get travel nurses because obviously the nurses were spreading and going to these hospitals. So I actually immediately filled like 5 of my units. The other 3, I was getting people to get ready to get other nurses in there, and they started booking. And I was like, this is like maybe a week after everybody canceled. They start booking and I'm like, who in the heck is booking these Airbnb? There's a travel ban. And, you know, it happened to be people from Seattle who were fixing their homes. There were nurses traveling, not wanting long term. So they were staying in Airbnbs. And it was just like random people traveling. And so my other three started to fill back up. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to see how this goes. Because one of them was my property that I own. And if all else failed, I didn't have to pay the mortgage, right? Because of the stuff going on with COVID. So they filled back up, and then they literally stayed full the entire COVID, 100% occupancy rate almost. And not only that, but the rates started to go up because so many people got scared and pulled theirs off the market and put long-term renters in there that there was actually more demand. That was in the lockdown phase of COVID. After people started, you know, June-ish, Airbnb was packed, higher than ever, growing like you've never seen it before. Glamping came onto the scene, all of these tiny homes and tents and things like that. So it was blowing up. People didn't want to stay at hotels anymore because they didn't want to be around other people. So they wanted to stay at Airbnbs where they had more privacy. And it has grown way past what it was in 2019 at this point, because we're only comparing numbers to 2019 since 2020 was so weird. Mm-hmm. And so it's grown way past that. And now I think they're up like 25% from last year, which was already up like 15% from 2019.
Yeah, so interesting. I just read an article about that on AirDNA it being up 25%. And so that's so interesting to hear it from a host perspective. We lived in an Airbnb during the 4 months start of the pandemic in someone's cabin who she wanted something that was long-term. So it's so interesting from the host perspective. She was a wonderful host, and she was sharing too about, you know, what the changes were and how it was going to affect Airbnb. So definitely something I've always been interested in. So I love chatting with you about this. And I know inside your course, the B&B method, you do teach about how to get into this industry really quickly and easily to like start a short-term rental. Can you tell us about some of the key topics that you cover inside your course and like how maybe someone can become a student and learn from you?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my course, we are learning every single step from the point at which you go get your LLC to talking to landlords, what you're going to say, how you're going to say it, who you're going to say it to. You are going to learn what a good location is, and not just from my opinion. You are actually going to be able to predict revenue for the year, depending on what property it is. I give you my ideas about areas that I would look into, no matter what state or actually country you're in. So you're going to have a really good grasp on where and how, who to talk to and how to say it. And then we do everything from set up the listing in a algorithm friendly way to filling your Airbnb. What do you need? How many do you need of those things? And then all the way to welcoming your first guest and automation. Amazing. So everything.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing. We'll make sure to also include a link for any of our listeners to make sure they can check out your course and also follow you along on Instagram, somewhere where I've been following you and you share your student success stories. And it seems like you and your students have created this freedom-filled life within your business. And I was just curious what type of lifestyle that you've been able to create from starting this short-term rental business.
Well, I would call it a dream lifestyle. just, you know, when you don't have to trade time, sky is the limit. So, of course, what I prayed for was some easy way out. Did I actually think it was possible? No. But I couldn't do these little things that make you a few dollars here and there. I needed something substantial that I didn't have to give a lot of time to, and I could replace my income, which at that time was about $5,000 a month. month. And that is exactly what Airbnb does. So because you have this huge time freedom, you can do whatever you want. I chose to travel the world and build another huge business. And that is what I do every day. I go on vacations. I teach women how to do this. I walk my dogs. I go hiking. I do whatever I want. Yeah.
That. Thank you for sharing. I know it's been a big proponent of us, you know, yes. Free field lifestyle. This is the podcast we're on, creating that, you know, not trading time for money and being able to be your own boss. And whether that looks like traveling the world or just, you know, being within your own city with your dog and walking the park. So your dog is so cute, by the way.
Okay. Thank you.
So for someone who is interested in starting a short-term rental business, you touched on some of the costs up front. Like, how much would you say those upfront costs are, and like how long until you see a return for those looking to invest?
Yeah. So, okay. First of all, there are numerous ways to start this business. If you're planning on arbitraging, which is what we've been talking about, which is the rent to rent model, you will need pretty much in every city first and deposit. So that's going to differ depending on where you're at. In Pittsburgh, it's not very much at all. It's like $1,500, but in LA or San Clemente, it might be like $3,000 for the first and the deposit. Just depends. And then you'll need money for furniture. Now, in the B&B method, I teach you how I was able to furnish 3-bedroom homes on $3,000. And it's really just about getting resourceful. So it can be as inexpensive as you are resourceful about getting that furniture. And of course, I teach you all my ways in my course. The other thing that I wanted to say is that for anybody who is really interested in Airbnb, but they don't have, you know, I would say like $5,000 to $6,000 for a 1-2 bedroom. There is another way, and that is by doing exactly what I teach, except you're doing it for someone else, and that would be managing their property. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do exactly what I teach, minus finding homeowners, you would do what I teach and find people that want or already are running their homes or investment properties as Airbnbs, but they no longer want to be in charge of it. This is in high demand and very high demand since Airbnb has blown up. And you don't need any money to start because the homeowner furnishes and everything. And there's no risk because you're not signing any lease. So if you're risk averse and you don't have a lot of cash up front, there is that option for you and you could still make a lot of money.
And in that option, because I think that that is primarily the option I've seen here in Playa del Carmen, is that they are then taking they call themselves co-hosts. They take a percentage. So it's a little bit lower profits, but still very profitable. Is that kind of the model?
Yeah. And okay, again, this depends on the city. I have somebody who teaches in my program is my client, Amanda. She didn't have the cash up front to do arbitrage. So she started with management, and she lives in the Poconos, Pennsylvania, which is a tourist town. She just happens to live in Pennsylvania too. And she has about 15 properties right now, and they are bigger properties. So let me say that. But you're not going to believe how much money she makes. Managing these houses in the Poconos, she's making like anywhere from $25,000 to $30,000 a month in the high season. So that's about 6 months. In the low season, she's making about 10.
Okay.
So that's a lot of cash.
Yeah. Yes. I definitely feel like that's happening here in Playa del Carmen during high end versus low season. So thank you for sharing, because I've been really curious about that business model as well.
Yeah.
So kind of speaking about rental management companies, can you talk about how it's possible to travel full time while you have Airbnbs? Does that mean that you use a rental management company, or do you manage them?
Yeah. So I've always managed my own. I recently just hired someone to manage mine in Seattle as I go hard in Pittsburgh. But I've always managed my own And I have been away from Seattle now for 2 years. It's very possible, as long as you set it up efficiently and, you know, you automate things. Now, when I'm in places like Africa, or if I just want to be completely off grid, which is totally fair, if you just need a break from it all, then I, you know, most of us hosts, we know each other, we have a community. So I do one of two things. I would either have someone babysit my Airbnbs, and then I would do that for them, or you can pay someone a percentage, and there are many companies, there are many people doing that as well, and you can still have a profit margin. You just have to find someone that's like, you know, will meet you halfway, like not charge 25%, but maybe like 10%. But it's so little work that I never have needed to do it till this point, even running another multi six figure business.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. So I am totally geeking out on this news, on this site I've discovered, AirDNA. I know that it's something you talk about. And we've kind of touched on how we're seeing these articles and these trends on like profits are higher, or booking time is higher. Occupancy is higher. Can you speak to trends that you're seeing in the market? Maybe which cities are trending for profitability?
Yeah. So one of the coolest things about having students literally everywhere is I get to see what is happening everywhere. And I'm gonna say this. People ask me this all the time. Where would you get an Airbnb? Everywhere is good. Everywhere is good. And you have to think about this from like a perspective of, yes, you might make less per night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but rent is $800 here. So you're still making that huge margin. So I would say if you're in any city, it doesn't matter if it's LA or if it's Minnesota or if it's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you can have huge margins. The demand is there. You, like, all of my students book out 95% or higher. The only destinations that you may want to, I don't even know if stay away from, but like not go full force in this moment when the market is kind of weird, is total destination places. So there is enough Airbnb demand in any city, pretty much anywhere, but places that are more expensive, ski resorts or, you know, like lake house places, they're actually seeing a little dip right now. And it most likely has to do with inflation and people not going on these big vacations right now in those kind of areas. But if it's a city or even outside of the city, if people are moving through those areas, Airbnbs are completely booked. I'm completely booked in Seattle, completely.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. So kind of speaking to those, like where you're choosing and what cities, you know, I've seen a lot of Airbnb and short-term rental changes happening in Vancouver, where I have, you know, my short-term, long-term rental. So I'm curious about how you handle regulations and changes in rules around Airbnb or short-term rentals.
Yeah, totally. And so the one thing that I like to tell people is, first of all, regulations are not a bad thing. They're a protection for a city, because when people hear regulations, they freak out. but most of the time, in some cities, you cannot Airbnb. You cannot, don't even try it in downtown New York. Don't try it in Santa Monica and San Francisco. Those places are just very, very regulated. They need to be, you know, or else there would be nowhere for anyone to live. Vancouver, I have a couple colleagues there, and basically what they do is they go into counties that aren't regulated as heavily. So I'm not really sure what the regulations are right now. I know they're more strict in Vancouver. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so right now you can only rent one property out. It has to be your permanent residency, and you have to live there for, I think, up to 6 months, meaning they're more, because the rental market is tough. You know, they're, like you're saying, there's not a lot of houses for long-term people. They came down to these regulations, not super recently. They've been in place for a while. That's kind of the thing that I've been chatting with about people in Vancouver, it's much more common to rent out like a room versus, yeah. And no one seems to have multiple properties. So I was just curious.
Yeah. So places like Vancouver, they have, you know, people were heavily investing in Vancouver for years now. And I'm sure that was one of the very first places regulated because of the people were buying up the whole, you know, city. So in areas like that, there's just really no way around it if it has to be their primary residence. Now, going outside of the city is what I recommend in places like New York and Vancouver. And that's what my colleagues are doing now. I think some of them were grandfathered in, you know, but now they're going to different little counties where it is not regulated as much and getting their Airbnbs there. Now, let me just compare it to Seattle, who has regulations as well. They were new, as I had so many Airbnbs. So in King County, which is the main county in Seattle, you, as an investor, you can have two. One technically needs to be your primary residence. So let's just say one, okay? If you are an investor, there's nothing you can do. You can only have one, and that's that. But if you are in doing arbitrage, the homeowner can only have one. You can run as many as you want. So in areas like Seattle, you would just get one property from this homeowner, and one property from this homeowner, and you would be following the regulations. They would be getting the permit. They would be following the regulations as well. So it really doesn't affect the manager or the arbitrage person. However, if it's like Vancouver, there's just really nothing you can do, but there's very limited cities where they do not allow it at all. And in those cases, we go outside of the city, and you would be shocked at the demand outside of the city because you're not allowed to do it in the city.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. So my parents live on Vancouver Island, which is a ferry ride away. Yeah. So Victoria is regulated like Vancouver because it's the city. But then up island, like Tofino is crushing it compared to even Vancouver now. And my parents are in Parksville, which is a tiny town. So I'm like, ooh, I'm like, mom, you got it. My mom's really into this new business model.
I love it.
And I know that you were talking about how close you are with your family and, you know, going into business with them. So definitely I can speak to that I've now have been looking outside in those smaller cities, especially because the island is like a very heavily traveled place for people in Vancouver to even go there. But
I will say one more thing about that is that if you are in a city and they are going to regulate it, you're going to know. So if you're in a city that's not already regulated, which are very slim nowadays, they announce it in like the city meetings and things like that. And you will know very far in advance when the dates of these court cases are and things like that. It has to go through a process. They can't just say, sorry, effective today, you're not running a short-term rental. It has to be, you know, voted on and things like that. So if you're in one of the cities that are not regulated, just make sure you stay up on that. I have, people in San Diego, they just got regulated. I have a girl with 10 units there, and she's just working with the landlord or the investor to see what they can do and see how they can keep as many up as possible. And then her plan is just to go outside of the county.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you for sharing. That was super helpful and insightful, even just for me kind of navigating a very regulated city and kind of making decisions there. So this has been such a fun episode with you. We're going to wrap it up here. Just a couple more questions. So for someone who is listening and really interested in getting into the short-term rental market through Airbnb, but a total newbie, what is your biggest piece of advice for them to get started?
With Airbnb, if you are on the, like, this sounds scary side, just know that Airbnb is one of the only business models that I personally know of that you can literally predict the revenue. And how we predict the revenue is with an algorithm that pulls all the other short-term rentals around and gives you an average of how much they're making. So you essentially will know how much your unit will make before you would ever sign a lease. And once you get the data, once you get the information, it's way less scary because you're going to have the facts. You're going to have all the information you need to see if the profit that you're going to make on this that place is worth your time. So this is just so foolproof. I have had hundreds of students over the years. I've helped hundreds of women open Airbnbs, and I have a 100% rate of success for anybody who has gotten an Airbnb. It's, you can't fail. There's data.
Okay, as a big nerd, everybody listening, if they know me in our community, know I'm a big nerd. I'm a big numbers girl. And so that was actually the first thing that got me hooked. I love that that was your piece of advice. It's the first thing that you hooked me on was basically like, I can run the numbers and have like that almost like security blanket wrapped around me of like, yeah. Yes, like it's achievable. So I'm so excited to continue to learn from you. I know that you have an upcoming free training. So I'd love for you to share with our listeners what they'll learn from your training happening next week and how they can get registered.
Absolutely. Yes. So I do an event every single year. And the first day is just really going into all of the ways in which you can start this business, whether it is arbitrage, whether you don't have any money up front, whether you want to put up a tent in your backyard. I'm going to break it all down for you in day one. I'm going to talk about profitability and how to talk to landlords or what, you know, what are the factors that they want to hear. I'm going to talk about in-depth look at what happened during COVID. I'm going to give you some first steps. So I'm really breaking everything down, all of the questions that I get day after day, and answering any questions that you have at the end.
Amazing. And what dates are those? Is the event happening?
That is June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And you can get registered. I have a link in my bio. I don't know if maybe you guys can put a link.
We'll include a link for all of our listeners. Absolutely.
Yeah, just get registered and we'll send you all of the details.
Okay, amazing. Well, Susie, it was so lovely to have you here. I really enjoyed this episode. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us and our listeners today.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun, guys.
The Freedom Filled Life podcast is brought to you by the Bucket List Bombshells. It's hosted by me, Cassie Torresillas, and my co-host, Shay Brown. If you loved today's episode, we'd be so grateful if you left us a review. Reviews help us spread the word about the Freedom Filled Life podcast, and they're a key part of sharing the show with other women who believe they're made for more. Until next week, keep on pursuing your own freedom-filled life.